is the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. This portion of the show is brought to you by Window World, the number one replacement window company in the United States, the original $189 window company. Online at windowworldstlouis.com. I am Paul Harris. Dan Strauss and Ian Geitz are here with me in the studio. And now for the showbiz segment of the show, our news director, Colin Jeffrey, a.k.a. Showbiz Boy, joins us. Hi, Colin. How are you?
Doing well, Paul. How are you?
Good. We've got a big summer movie opening this weekend. And for the first time in a couple of months, you and I have both seen the same movie this week at a press screening.
Yes, indeed.
And that movie is the all-female remake of Ghostbusters, although I should say it's not all women in the movie. It's just that the four Ghostbusters are women, just like the four in the original, which was 1984?
84 was Ghostbusters, 86 was the sequel.
Yeah.
Wow.
In the four original, of course, it was the men. You had Bill Murray, Harold Ramis, Ernie Hudson, and Dan Aykroyd. Mm-hmm. And in this one, you've got Kristen Wiig, Melissa McCarthy, Kate McKinnon, and Leslie Jones. Those last two you may not know if you haven't watched Saturday Night Live, but yeah, they have been breakout stars in that show, particularly Kate McKinnon. So what did you think?
I was pleasantly surprised by this movie.
Me too.
Now, it helps that my expectations were very, very low heading into this.
Is that because you saw the trailer?
No, it's just, this is a movie that existed in a time that worked very well for that movie. Kind of a wany or zany, wacky
comedy. You can combine those and call it a wany.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Just one of those comedies that Bill Murray, Harold Ramis, Dan Aykroyd grew up making.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this was the logical extension of Ghostbusters was a logical extension of their careers at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also leery when they say, hey, you know what's a good idea? Remember that 32-year-old movie? Let's do it again.
Yeah.
That's typically not a good recipe for success. See Man from U.N.C.L.E. last year.
That's a good point.
In which they took a classic TV series. Or Get Smart is the exception to that. That was a great television show, and they made a movie that I thought was really funny.
It was okay, yeah. It was fine.
And so this could go either way, and I've got to say, I thought this was funny. It was, in all honesty, probably funnier than the original Ghostbusters, but not as good a movie, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I would say this to anybody who had trepidations about this movie because they felt like you were treading on holy ground. No, not the original Ghostbusters. You can't remake the original Ghostbusters. You're forgetting how much of a suckfest Ghostbusters 2 was. The sequel that those original cast members made, they made a bad remake of Ghostbusters themselves. So you can't blame anybody who comes along and makes another one. Oh, it's not as good as the original. Well, that may be true, but it can't be worse than two. And by the way, I think this one is pretty close to number one.
Yeah, it really is. And I want to sort of go back to that. When I say better movie, I'm just talking about the overall structure. It sort of strained at points, and they had to stray for a few times. Every character, except for one that was in the original movies, makes a cameo. I thought it was fan service. That's fine. But the bad side of fan service is very rarely does it integrate seamlessly into the movie. Bill Murray's cameo works perfectly.
Yes.
Makes sense.
Yes.
Everyone else, It's just tacked in there to say it's in there.
Oh, I thought the way they did it was actually very clever.
The Dan Aykroyd scene could have been completely cut. The Janine Melnitz scene was.
You mean Annie Potts? Yeah.
Unnecessary.
Yeah, but it was fine. And you know what?
But that's what I'm saying. It didn't add to the movie other than as fan service.
But it did that, and it did that in a very funny way. And you know, we were at the same screening. The audience, when those faces came up on the screen, it was like, all right, yeah. And by the way, it also was an affirmation that the people who did the original weren't looking down their noses at this remake.
Yes.
They all said, okay, go ahead, yeah. And by the way, Dan Aykroyd gets an executive producer credit on this.
The Harold Ramis sort of cameo, and yeah, I thought was very nice.
Well, a little tribute to him.
Yeah, and there should be one.
And by the way, his son, Daniel Ramis, also is in the movie. You won't recognize him because you haven't seen him before, but he's in a scene involving a rock band in a nightclub that the Ghostbusters have to go and save. And so that's very nice as well. The one member of the original cast who was not in there was Rick Moranis, mm-hmm. who had the classic scene from Ghostbusters 1 with Harold Ramis. And by the way, I think everybody would agree with me, funniest scene ever by a man with a colander on his head. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with me?
Yeah.
It's the Vince Clortho scene.
Vince, you said before you were waiting for a sign. What sign are you waiting for?
Gozer the Traveler. He will come in one of the pre-chosen forms. During the rectification of the Valdrani, the Traveler came as a large and moving torb. Then, during the third reconciliation of the last of the McKetrick supplicants, they chose a new form for him, that of a giant slore.
Slore!
Many Shubs and Zools knew what it was to be roasted in the depths of the slore that day, I can tell you.
Every time I hear that, I laugh. Every time I hear it, I think of Rick Moranis being handed the script, and there's that speech in it. And you know he went over to Aykroyd and Ramis and said, slore? What are you having me say here? What are the McKetrick supplicants? And they said, it doesn't matter. It doesn't mean anything. It's just silliness.
Yes.
Just say it.
There's something that I really liked about this movie, and I think unless you're sort of a nerd about how movies are made, you may not recognize it, but I'm going to tell you about it because I think it'll help you appreciate this. When we used to get movies on VHS, you could get them standard. That's what you'd get most of the time. Or you could get something called Letterbox, and it had the little black stripes on top and bottom. And the idea was it was the same ratio that you saw in a movie theater.
Right.
It was wider.
Yep.
Well, this is shot in Letterbox, and they leave intentionally at the bottom, at the top and bottom, a form of the Letterbox with black. And there's a reason I think they did that intentionally. If you were to go back and watch something like Captain EO in Letterbox, you will notice that it was shot in 3D. They add those effects in. And something that they do is the effects extend beyond the image, and they go on to the Letterbox.
Huh.
This in 3D has that same effect. The 3D effects extend off the image and into that Letterbox.
Mm-hmm.
The way this was shot in 3D was very 1980s. Things coming at you, cheesy,
yeah,
3D.
One character gets slimed and the slime is coming right at you.
Yes, yeah. One character jumps and it's a jump scare that's at you. Go see this in 3D because that is fun to remember. That's the way they used to shoot it. And it's a clever, I'm not going to say homage, but it's a throwback. And it's another piece of sort of subtle fan service, I think. But it's a way they used to do 3D in some movies, is they would allow it to extend beyond the image to feel, yeah, I mean, stereoscopic sound, that sort of thing. You know?
What did you think of the actresses?
I liked all of them. I thought they were, they all fit roles, and I was happy to see there was only one scene, really, that I can think of in which Melissa McCarthy plays a bowling ball. Other than that, she's mm-hmm. funny, and funny being sort of the intellectual one of the group, or one of the intellectuals of the group.
Yeah.
And
they didn't overdo Leslie Jones screaming too much.
Not at all.
Really?
I was worried
about
that.
That's the only things in the trailer that you see is her.
Yes, and she has sort of
over
that,
the top.
She has that sort of hysterical manner at times, and it adds because she's the only one with, she's the Ernie Hudson character.
And she has to overcome her stereotypical loud black woman from the streets character. And I think she does it.
Yes.
I think she does a good job. And I think Kate McKinnon, I think people are going to be talking about her from this movie. They've already been talking about her because of her work as Hillary Clinton on Saturday Night Live and other characters that she's done on there. She's been a breakout comedy star the last 18 months, and I think this is only going to increase her visibility, and people are going to talk about her because she plays effectively the Harold Ramis role,
yes,
as the one who invents all the toys that they play with.
Funny.
Yeah, she's very,
very
funny.
The second half of the movie, she absolutely crushes it, I thought. And there's one other character that made it for me. Chris Hemsworth as a receptionist was so, I didn't know he could do this sort of running gag as the ditzy blonde.
Yeah.
Wow, was he funny.
And by the way, it's a nice thing for them to say, okay, we made the male stars of Ghostbusters female in this movie, and we took the secretary role and gave it to a guy and turned him into as you say, the ditzy blonde of the cast.
Not just a guy, but like Thor, right?
Yes, Chris Hemsworth, who is Thor,
plays a
receptionist
yeah.
who doesn't understand that when the phone rings, he should answer it.
He's a dim bulb.
He's a mimbo.
Yeah. At one point, somebody says to him, what was that call about? Oh, apparently a goat is loose somewhere. He doesn't even know that it's a ghost. He says it's a goat. And they just let it go. And they have those nice little comedy takes between the women. And I think they do a good job. Let me mention some of the other people who are in here in a supporting cast. Andy Garcia plays the mayor of New York.
Oh, my gosh. How good was he?
He was perfect. Cecily Strong, also from Saturday Night Live. I thought she overacted.
Yes.
As the mayor's assistant. Just trying to, you could tell she was wishing that she were one of the Ghostbusters and didn't get that role, so she was going to try to impress. She overdoes it. Zach Woods from HBO's Silicon Valley. He's the first character in the movie you see and the first one to encounter a ghost. And his simple presence on screen made some people in the theater giggle because I guess they're Silicon Valley fans like I am.
Yeah.
There's an actor named Neil Casey plays the villain who sets the plot in motion. Steve Higgins, who you may know from Jimmy Fallon's Tonight Show. He's the announcer on that show and kind of the sidekick for Jimmy Fallon.
He has the least family-friendly scene in the entire movie.
Correct.
And there are two. Like, this is not a movie. I'm going to say it. This isn't a movie for 10-year-olds, I don't think. There's one or two things that may push it over, or if you're going to take them, be aware. They may need to do sort of the earmuffs blindfold for just two quick scenes.
Well,
it depends on what your kids... I just want to say, like, there's some...
I don't think 10-year-olds are going to be surprised by anything they saw in this movie.
Yeah, maybe.
Ed Begley Jr. is in there. Matt Walsh from Veep is in there. It's a very, very solid cast. And when I walked out, I summed this movie up with three words. They did it.
Yeah.
You know, anybody who thought this was going to be... the Ghostbusters remake was going to be a disaster... they're wrong. I think they did it. And I will say this, and we've said this about other movies. It might be a little bit long.
Yeah.
But that might be because we stayed through the entire credits, which we urge you to do, right?
Yes. Not only are there funny wrap-up scenes at the beginning of the credits, but stay all the way through.
Don't give anything away.
No, I'm going to say this. They are counting very heavily on this, and I was happy to see that it was good. This is launching products. Ecto Cooler is back. Slime Twinkies. Then there are new cartoons that are coming out of this. There's all sorts of properties that are coming out. Toys with female Ghostbusters. And I believe the cartoons are set up around the idea of a Ghostbusters franchise. If we didn't make it clear, this is essentially a reboot.
Mm-hmm.
This is... previous Ghostbusters never existed.
Right. You don't see the original Ghostbusters handing over the franchise to these women. This is as if there were never any Ghostbusters and they're starting from scratch.
Exactly.
And they're doing a nice job.
And yeah, I don't really need to go into the plot other than they have to stop ghosts. I mean...
that's all you need to
know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go in. I think you will enjoy this.
What do you give it on a scale of 10?
I gave it an 8 because, man, I really liked
this. I gave it an 8.5.
Yeah. This is one of the funniest movies of the year, I think, so far.
That surprises me with you two because I thought, and all you heard before was, oh, this is going to suck.
Yeah.
This thing's going to be horrible.
Yeah.
This is going to be terrible.
Well, first, I think that comes from two things. One, people who were like, how dare you?
Yeah.
And the other one was the commercials and the trailer have the least funny material from the movie. If you watch those alone, you go, is this a comedy? There's nothing funny in them. And what's funny to me about that is so many times when there is a comedy, the trailer has all the good jokes.
Yes.
Yeah.
In this case, the trailers and the commercials have none of the good jokes.
Good.
Which is smart, actually.
Yeah.
In retrospect, that was smart because it lowered my expectations that the first 10 minutes I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, wow, this is fun.
Yeah.
Wasn't anticipating that.
Two more things about Ghostbusters. One, have you seen the Progressive insurance commercial with Flo? And she encounters a ghost.
Yeah.
Who I guess is Chris Hemsworth, right? That character is turned into a ghost commercial, at least. And at the end, it says, Progressive Insurance, the official insurance of Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
I did not know that we had official... products of movies. I knew we had the official Olympic thing or the official so-and-so, the NFL or whatever it was. I didn't know that movies had official things.
Yeah. And we're sitting there talking before the movie, and you may not remember this, when Jurassic World came out last year, they merchandised the heck out of that, including a deal with Barbasol, the shaving gel, the shaving cream. Jurassic World Barbasol.
But is that because in the original movie, that's where Wayne Knight hides the dinosaur things?
The embryos.
The embryos. Or things. I'm a scientist, so I can call them things.
Yeah, and by the way, I got to say that about Ghostbusters. I love that they kept intact that idea of all this ridiculous science speak about.
Yeah.
It felt right. It was just, it was fun.
Yeah. The other thing I have to mention here is that Ghostbusters will do huge this weekend. I want to get your prediction in a second. It is going to have a little problem, as we say. It's a scientific word.
That's trouble and problem.
Right. There's going to be some problems this weekend because it's not going to be released in China, which is the second biggest film market in the world. Why? Because China has censorship guides for films which strictly prohibit anything that promotes cults or superstition, including films that feature ghosts or supernatural beings in a semi-realistic way. Now, I've seen all the Ghostbusters movies. Nothing in there is semi-realistic. It's a cartoonish kind of slime ball. But in China, that's enough to get you banned, and so it won't be there. Besides that, the people in China that were interviewed by the Hollywood Reporter about this, they say it wasn't just the censorship because of that. It's that the original Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2 never played in China, so they don't think there's much of a market for it.
Wow.
Which I think is baloney, because that was 32 years ago. You have a generation of people who have grown up never seeing Ghostbusters, and for whom this movie will be a comedy revelation, I think.
Yeah.
And I think that would have been the case in China.
I agree.
All right.
I wish it was opening there because, I mean, Tiananmen Square happened in between Ghostbusters and now, so things have changed a bit in China.
Yes, but in China, they don't know what happened at Tiananmen Square in 1989. If you go on Baidu, which is the Chinese version of Google, and you type in Tiananmen Square, all it tells you is what Tiananmen Square is, not what happened there.
Not the massacre.
There's nothing about the massacre on any internet in China. They're a little bit restrictive in that country.
Yeah.
What do you think this thing does domestically?
Well, hopefully reviews convince people to go see it. I think $50 million would be a nice good number for it to.
That's all?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's actually a good number. If you asked Sony probably a couple weeks ago, they were really scared about this. This movie cost $150 million to make and had enormous marketing. So I don't know how they're going to make money domestically. Honestly.
Word of mouth is how they're going to make money.
Yeah, and hopefully I'm wrong, and it does way more than 50, but I think 50 is a good round number, because I think there are people out there who are just so pig-headed that they're like, oh, how could they get rid of the original Ghostbusters? Well, one of them's dead, so he took care of that. Like, there's only three left.
Yeah. And they tried to do three for 20 years, never materialized.
Right. And before you text me and ask why Rick Moranis is not in the movie, right? He's not playing Vince Clortho again. either he has gone off and taken a job with Gozer the Traveler, or no, the truth is he retired from acting. About 3 years ago, he just said, that's it. I'm not making any more movies. I'm not doing TV. I'm out of the business. Don't even call me.
Wow.
And so I'm sure they did call him, but he said no to this.
He's living off that Honey, I Shrunk the Kids money.
The other movie that's opening in St. Louis this week actually opened up on Wednesday and will compete with Ghostbusters this weekend and won't do nearly as well, even though I think it's just as good a movie. It's called The Infiltrator. This is a new one from Bryan Cranston, who is having a remarkable post-Breaking Bad career. He did that show for 5 years, got all sorts of rewards for it, so did the show. Then he left that and went off to do All the Way,
and won it.
Which was a play that worked its way to Broadway, where he won a Tony Award for playing Lyndon Johnson. Then he went off and did a movie called Trumbo. All he got out of that was an Academy Award nomination for Best Actor. And then he went and did the HBO TV version of All the Way, which I'm sure is going to win another award for him. He'll probably get an Emmy for the same role that he won a Tony for. And now he's back in The Infiltrator, in which he plays Robert Mazur, who's an undercover federal officer who uncovers some money laundering by Pablo Escobar's Colombian cocaine operation in the mid-1980s. There's been a lot of talk about Pablo Escobar in the last year because Netflix had a hit with their series Narcos. And this is kind of in the same realm, but it's from the American point of view. And Bryan Cranston is really good as Robert Mazur, who's a real guy who's still around. It co-stars John Leguizamo and Amy Ryan and Olympia Dukakis and Benjamin Bratt and a woman named Diane Kruger, who I've never seen before. But holy cow, is she attractive and very talented in this movie. Do you remember the movie Donnie Brasco?
Yeah.
With Johnny Depp and Al Pacino?
Uh-huh.
One of the few things I really liked Johnny Depp in, where he played an undercover FBI guy who infiltrates the mob as a low-level mob enforcer working with Al Pacino, who brought him into the mob. In that movie, you saw a lot of what it's like to be at the bottom rung of the mob. You know, the only way you can make money is by beating up on parking meters to get the change out of them, and really small, low-level stuff. Well, in this movie, it's the other end. It's the top end of the spectrum, where Robert Mazur is trying to bring down a multi-billion-dollar cocaine operation, which at that time was bringing in $800 million a year in cocaine to the United States. And he not only was able to infiltrate the operation, but also helped bring down the seventh largest bank in the world, BCCI, because they got involved. And this movie shows you how he does all of those things. There's not a lot of shoot 'em up and killing. Just like in Donnie Brasco, you didn't see a lot of that. But in this movie, you really see what it's like to be undercover. You get to see how Robert Mazur and his colleagues do what they do in going after these bad guys. And Benjamin Bratt is kind of the top bad guy that we see in the movie. You also get to see the toll this took on Robert Mazur's family. I mean, again, if you saw Donnie Brasco, you know that Johnny Depp's wife in the movie was played by Anne Heche, and she's home with the kid and doesn't get to see her husband for days, weeks at a time, and freaks out wondering what's going on with him. Meanwhile, the family is having a life, and he can't be there for birthdays. He can't be there for Christmas because he's got to be with the mob. Well, in this case, it's very much the same thing. The Robert Mazur character that Bryan Cranston plays can't be there with his wife and kids for their important real-life things. He's got to be off and doing this. So I thought the movie was remarkably well told. It's a wonderful cast. And Bryan Cranston, I just love everything this guy does. I give it an 8 out of 10. It's called The Infiltrator. It opened on Wednesday. It's playing in theaters all around town right now. I highly recommend it.
Okay.
So there are two good movies opening this weekend. And what's the last time we were able to say that?
I'd have to go back.
It's been quite a while. Quite a while.
Yeah.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Emmy Award nominations that came out yesterday and some more showbiz stuff to come here on the Big 550 KTRS. This is the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Dan Strauss and Ian Geiser are here in the studio with me. And Colin Jeffries along as well for this showbiz hour that we do this hour every Friday here on the Big 550. And the 68th Annual Emmy Award nominations were announced yesterday morning. And any surprises in this list for you, Colin?
Not really, because they put so many. I mean, there's seven nominations for Best Drama Series.
Mm-hmm.
So things are going to get left out. But seven, I mean, that's a lot of options.
Most of the categories have at least six, and in some cases, seven nominees. I will tell you one big surprise. It's actually a dual surprise. One is that in the category of variety talk series, in addition to Jimmy Fallon, Bill Maher, James Corden, John Oliver, and Jimmy Kimmel, Jerry Seinfeld and his series Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee is nominated for an Emmy Award for a show that's not on television. Now, that phrase right there, not on television, has changed a lot in the last few years with streaming TV.
Mm-hmm.
Netflix and Amazon, they have both won Emmys and lots of other awards for many of their shows. Is this the first time Crackle has been up for a major award?
Yeah.
Because that's who distributes comedians in cars getting coffee, and you would not be mistaken to say, what is Crackle? Because you don't ever have to go to the Crackle website to watch this. You just go to comediansincarsgettingcoffee.com, and you can see, this week it's Lorne Michaels, last week it was J.B. Smoove.
I've liked this season, by the way. Margaret Cho. Jim Gaffigan.
Yeah. I've watched every one that he's done. I think it's very, very clever. But the fact that it's nominated for an Emmy Award is stunning to me.
Except it might be the second best talk show on.
Behind?
John Oliver. And John Oliver, that show, agree or disagree with his politics, it's not always about his politics. Sometimes it's just investigative journalism, in a way. And it's spectacular. Next year, it's going to compete with Samantha Bee's show, which, if you're not watching Full Frontal,
that's what I had to ask you. How is Samantha Bee not on this list?
I have no clue the Emmy period. This is one of these things where I feel like they're like, oh, we're nominating this season from 2013. I have no idea that when the nominating period begins and ends for this.
Because if that nominating period included even one week of Samantha Bee's show, she should be on here and she should win.
Which I think it had to, because Roots is on there from the History Channel.
That came on after Samantha Bee started.
I think that was on last month. Or something, or maybe May. So
this
I don't know
huge,
how it's.
This is a huge gaffe on the part of the voters.
Yeah, and no
to
offense.
Leave her off there.
No offense to either James Corden or Jimmy Fallon, but when your most famous things are singing in a car or smashing eggs on your head,
yep,
you're not as good as Samantha Bee.
I agree.
Again, no offense to those shows.
And I have no problem with Jerry Seinfeld's Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee being on there. I'm just shocked that it is, because I don't think of it as TV. It's produced as a TV show, but
there's not even a length. Some are 11 minutes, some are 17, some are 30. It's just
that's the way it goes on the internet. But that's fine. But the fact that Samantha Bee was left off here is an absolute crime, as far as I'm concerned. Now, who do you think is a runaway winner in any category? If you had to point to one or two categories and you said, here's a lock, what would you choose?
Comedy series, I think it's a lock that Veep wins it. I wish Silicon Valley won it, especially if it's last season, if that's what they're including. But again, I don't know.
They've given that to Transparent the last couple of years, it's the Amazon series.
Have you ever tried to watch Transparent?
I watched 1.5 episodes and then said, well, I'm done with that forever.
This needs to stop being nominated as a comedy. And I get that it's transformative in society and look what we're doing. Okay, I get that. It's not funny is the problem.
Correct.
And comedy should make you laugh.
Correct.
There's one other person that I think is almost a guarantee win, and that's Rami Malek for Mr. Robot, which you watched 4 episodes of.
Yes.
Holy smokes, is he good in that. I think he's going to win that. But then there are a few categories. Oh, and one other category. Miniseries. The People vs. O.J. Simpson. I think will win that.
Oh, yeah. And the guy that played Chris Darden is from St. Louis, and he's up for
Sterling K. Brown, I believe is his name.
Yeah, he's up for an Emmy.
He's one of 2 St. Louisans. Yeah. Ellie Kemper.
Yeah.
Also up. But yeah, there are some categories that are, made for TV movie. Well, will probably be what you said. All the way.
The Bryan Cranston JFK
movie. Because
it's
up against Luther, the BBC. Yeah, it's going to win.
Yeah, I hope so, because it's terrific. And I think that Bryan Cranston should win for playing LBJ in that movie. But you told me off the air that's not going to happen. It's going to be Courtney B. Vance as Johnny Cochran from The People versus O.J.
Oh, my gosh. How good was he in that?
He was fine.
Oh. I thought he was excellent. You know, he looks like him.
He's up against Cuba Gooding Jr. in the same category. Sometimes that splits the vote.
Yes.
The one that I would consider an absolute lock, if I were given a ballot, the very first thing I would do is go through the ballot and find Tatiana Maslany's name.
Yes.
She is the star of a show called Orphan Black that we haven't really talked about much here on the air since you recommended about 2 months ago that I watch it. Because I said to you, give me something new that I can binge watch. And you said, have you checked out Orphan Black? And I hadn't. And it took me 15 minutes of watching the first episode to decide I was going to watch every episode.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, 3 seasons have made it to Netflix. And it's streaming. No, I'm sorry, not on Netflix. It's streaming on Amazon Prime.
Yes.
And
the 4th season is on right now, or just finished.
Yeah, just finished on BBC America. And for those of you who have not seen this show, I will just tell you that Tatiana Maslany doesn't just play the lead character. She plays the lead character's sister and her 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 brother.
Yep.
It's a remarkable performance. Every time you see her in a scene, and sometimes she's playing two different characters in a scene,
or
you will be, sometimes more. you will be absolutely stunned at how good she is. I can't imagine what her work day was like. She must just show up there in the morning and go, well, put on the makeup and then I'll know how to act.
Yeah. And not just that, different accents, completely different mannerisms.
Yes.
Wow. And then there's one or two times in there when she has to play one of the characters playing one of the other characters.
Oh, yes.
And you're just like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Here's Allison pretending to be Helena. That's the suburban housewife pretending to be the psycho serial killer.
Yes.
And then the serial killer is acting like the normal British woman. And it's just, wow. I will tell you that somewhere in the middle of the third season, I kind of lost track of who was who. Not the characters that she plays, but the other people around her and what they were doing. Because there are some convoluted plots in here. I'm not giving anything
away about
this show. I'm not even telling you why they're all sisters and why she plays her own brother. I'm not going to explain that. Because you have to discover this show on your own. If you haven't, go get it. It's called Orphan Black. As I said, it's streaming on Amazon Prime. If you have that, get it and watch it. And I think that she should win for lead actress seven times over, because that's how many roles she does on an ongoing basis on that show.
I really hope she does. I hope so, too.
Okay. Anybody else in here that we had to mention? Oh, how does Homeland still get nominated for Best Drama Series?
How is Homeland still on?
I don't know.
I have not watched that since...
The first year?
No, I finished up, oh gosh, what's the actor's name? Damian Lewis's storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And then I stopped
watching.
Okay,
so you watched through the third season.
Third season.
And then I was like, the second season.
And then I was like, well, that was good.
Yeah, I gave up on it.
Imagine, yeah, I mean, it's just, imagine the second half, or the last third of Jaws, like, was after they got the shark.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, okay, now we're on the beach.
That's right.
I don't understand how you go forward.
Yeah, I'm hoping that Better Call Saul will win in that category, but I have a feeling Mr. Robot will make a very strong play, because it's getting a lot of publicity. And I did notice that my Mississippi Grind co-star, Ben Mendelsohn,
there you go,
is nominated for Best Supporting Actor in Bloodline on Netflix. So good luck to him. And the other thing I said a little while ago about Ghostbusters was that Kate McKinnon is having a breakout year. She's nominated for Best Supporting Actress in a Comedy Series, up against actresses from Veep, Transparent, Mom, and Getting On. She's the only one from any kind of late-night show to get non-host nomination.
Yeah, this is her Sarah Palin moment for, I think that's what this is.
Because she's playing Hillary Clinton.
Because she's playing, yeah.
Yeah. Anything to say about the fact that the major networks fell down on their faces again? I did not see NBC or CBS getting any major nominations on this list, Colin.
No, and I think it makes sense right now. They don't stick by the shows that they need to, I don't think. Like, they got a bunch for SNL, like NBC did.
Mm-hmm.
But,
or The Voice.
Yeah. You know, reality shows and sketch shows,
mm-hmm.
and Jimmy Fallon gets it. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense to me, because they're just, we were talking about this off air. I'm not a huge fan of Modern Family, because Modern Family is derivative of The Office, which was unique and different,
mm-hmm.
and even a ripoff of a British show.
Mm-hmm.
But I just... They're not doing new things. You hear Orphan is the New Black, and you give a description.
Orphan is the New Black?
Jeez. Orphan Black. You hear a description of that show. I don't know how you're not intrigued.
Yeah.
Whereas Modern Family, here's the pitch. It's a big family that doesn't always get along. Which of those shows is more interesting to you?
I will say this. There's nothing wrong with those shows. That show and Big Bang Theory still gets the biggest audience of any comedy on television.
No.
And, yeah, it does.
No. I'm saying no. There's nothing wrong with them. But I'm saying if you were to... I think if I were to sit down, I could come up with other things where nerds are awkward around girls. Isn't it funny? I could probably find that description for 5 or 10 other shows through TV.
Yeah. Big Bang Theory, if it was going to win, would have won in its first first two or three seasons. Now it's in its, what, ninth season, tenth season? I don't even know. It's still funny. It's still a good show, and it's still in reruns on TBS about every 8 minutes. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean it's going to be an Emmy.
They actually show Big Bang episodes during the commercials of other Big Bang episodes. Just constant Big Bang Theory.
And there's your showbiz stuff for this week here on the Big 550 KTRS.